Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. It is Monday. It is Labor Day. So if you have the day off, as I do, I hope you have a lovely one and it's all nice out. This is an interview I did with Alice Feeney. I am so excited. I was so excited to talk to her. I'm so excited for y'all to listen to this interview. I love Alice Feeney. We have talked about her thrillers many, many times on the podcast because they're so good and they're all dark and twisty and turny. And her latest one, Rock, Paper, Scissors, is about a married couple who go away on an anniversary trip and all is not as it seems. So, if you want to get a hold, I was going to say us. It's still us. Adam is still here for the next week, but if you want to get a hold of the podcast, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at ProBookNerds. You can email us at ProfessionalBookNerds@Overdrive.com, and of course, our website is ProfessionalBookNerds.com. I think that's everything. So, I hope you all enjoy this interview I did with Alice Feeney on the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Jill, and my guest today is New York Times bestselling author Alice Feeney. Her debut novel, Sometimes I Lie, was an international bestseller, and I can confirm that an advanced copy of it was passed around like mad here at the Overdrive offices. Alice was a BBC journalist for 15 years, and several of her books are currently being adapted for the screen, including her latest book, Rock, Paper, Scissors, which is why she is on. Alice, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat to you.
Can you start by giving our listeners a brief introduction to Rock, Paper, Scissors?
Yes, I can. Rock, Paper, Scissors is my latest dark and twisty thriller. And this one is about a couple who've basically forgotten what made them fall in love. Things have been very wrong with Mr. and Mrs. Wright for quite a long time. And when Adam and Amelia win a weekend away to Scotland, they both think it might be just what their marriage needs. He's a self-confessed workaholic and screenwriter, and he's lived with a condition called face blindness his whole life, which means that he can't recognise friends or family or even his wife. She works for Batty Dog's Home in London, and she thinks trying to save the world is far more important than trying to rule it. And every anniversary, the couple basically exchange traditional gifts, sometimes paper or cotton, pottery, maybe tin. And each year, Adam's wife writes him a letter that she never lets him read. Until now, they both know this weekend is either going to make or break their marriage. But Adam and Amelia didn't randomly win this trip. One of them is lying, and someone doesn't want them to leave or to live happily ever after. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I mean, I've read the book and even I'm like, oh man, that sounds so crazy. And it is. So I actually first kind of want to start with Adam's face blindness because I'm sort of wondering, like, what was the inspiration to have a character have face blindness?
So I came across somebody with this condition a few years ago, and I just became a little bit obsessed with it because I think I'm the opposite. I tend to always remember a face. It doesn't matter whether it's someone who I might have bought a loaf of bread from 2 years ago in the bakery. I just remember these things. So the idea to me of not being able to recognize people, not just casual acquaintances, but even your wife, to walk into a restaurant and not be able to recognize your partner, I just found that absolutely fascinating. And then my dark and slightly twisty imagination ran away with it and plotted a little thriller inside my head. And the result was Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Yeah, I'm wondering, and obviously we don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but when it does come to your books like this, you know, you said you came across face blindness and then you sort of like had this idea for the book. Do you kind of, when it comes to your books, do you know kind of where the end is before you start, or are you kind of surprised along the way?
Yes, I'm definitely a planner. I have to know exactly what's going to happen with the entire story before I write a word of it. So I tend to write in my garden shed, and if you could see it, it looks like the lair of a crazy lady. There are just notes stuck everywhere, different coloured cards, scribbles all over the place. And that's me plotting out the whole book. And there are different coloured cards for different characters or different timelines. And I like to be able to see the whole story just by staring at the wall before I begin. And then I can see exactly where I'm going. And for me to start without knowing where I was going, I guess I'd be scared the whole time of getting lost, if that makes sense, rather than just enjoying the journey. And of course, you know, you take little diversions en route, and you might spot a little creepy chapel somewhere and think, you know what, I'm going to go off route for this little bit here, but then come back. But I always end up at the same planned destination, which is what helps me to sort of leave all those little clues and breadcrumbs behind, hopefully for readers to find.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, you know, as you said, you have some dark and twisty things that happen in your books. And this one in particular, like, there were definitely things I thought I was picking up and was sort of right, but also not at all. And as a reader, and I'll say this, I've said this on the podcast, not to you, but I will tell you that one of the reasons your book, the Sometimes I Lie, was so popular at our offices was because we have a lot of suspense and thriller writers, readers, and we're really good at guessing and seeing things coming. And your books always just completely blindside us. And we're just like, have no idea what is coming. But
well, that has made my day. Thank you. That's a...
But yeah, no, it's true though. I just remember the way we passed around Sometimes I Lie, like you, it was just your debut, like nobody, you know, and because everyone's like, you're never gonna guess where it goes, and you don't. But if you go back and read them, there are those clues that are there, and it's just like masterful work on your behalf as a writer to be able to do all of that, to like have those clues there and still surprise people.
Oh my goodness. I'm so flattered. Thank you. That really does mean that means a huge amount to me. And I think it's so important. The book has to be fair. If you're going to write books like these, it's got to be fair to the reader, because I love reading these books too. And I want to know that I had a chance to guess. Mm-hmm. I want to know that the clues were there all along. And so, you know, that means a huge amount. I'm really, really happy to hear you say that. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, I liked the way you said you want to think that you have a chance at sort of guessing. And that for me, like as a reader, that's part of like, it's like a game almost with any of these types of books.
But... Exactly. It's like a puzzle that you do, but also don't want to solve at the same time.
Yes, exactly. It's so much fun though, because you're sort of like, is this a clue? Is this what's going on here? I think this is a clue, but I'm not sure if this is a clue. Do I have to remember this? Is it going to come back? It's so much fun. And yours in particular, they're just so twisty, but you do have these characters, and it's all so good. And I loved this one, just like all of the others.
Thank you.
So the face blindness, this is obviously not a surprise for anybody. You know, you're aware of this from Adam at the very beginning. Did you, like, you mentioned that you had come across somebody who had this. Did you talk to anybody with it as part of your research to sort of understand what that's like?
I did a lot of research, and I was absolutely sure I had discovered this condition, which hardly anybody had heard about and was very original. And I'm always so scared when I hit send still, because I basically don't talk about the books with anyone at all until I've completely finished them. So I write 3 drafts and then I'll send the book off to my agent. And until that point, nobody knows anything about it. They don't know the title, the subject, nothing. So imagine my surprise having hit send when I found out that one of my agents actually has face blindness, and that my editor in America has lived with face blindness her whole life. And I didn't know this. It was like this huge, crazy coincidence. Everyone thinking, did she know? Is that why she's written this? And no, I swear I didn't know. But my goodness, I was so firstly surprised, but secondly, so grateful, because everyone was able to help me make it as authentic as possible. Imagine having your editor know about the condition that you're writing about. So it was fantastic. She could tell me the things that worked and the things that could work better. And she had some stories of her own, which we threw into the mix. So I hope, I genuinely, hand on heart, hope that it feels authentic to the reader, because it really should do, with all the input that's gone into it from people who really, really do know what living with face blindness is like.
That is quite a coincidence.
Isn't it?
Oh man, especially if they don't know and they just, you're like, here's my latest. They're like, great. And then they start reading.
I know. And it's, I have a wonderful editor in America, and sometimes I read her notes and I think, can she see inside my head? And so I hope nobody thought I could see inside theirs, because it genuinely was a surprise when I found out. I have to keep thinking about the books I'm writing next and who might think what when I hand those ones in. But but now we won't worry too much about that. We'll just concentrate on this one.
Yeah, just concentrate on this one.
one at a time. One at a time.
Yeah, I'm always, you know, sort of when it comes to suspense and thriller books, I'm always just, you know, it's always curious to me, like, how people come up with their ideas and sort of, you know, in this case, it was this like face blindness, but like, how do you get from that to sort of the rest of the story? Obviously without spoiling anything, but you know,
but it takes me such a long time. I basically think about the books for a really long time before I commit to writing them. I guess because books take a really long time to write, so I want to be sure, and I want to know the characters really well and be sure that I want to spend that level of time with them, being inside their head and sometimes letting them inside mine. Mm-hmm. This book, I remember, I'll never forget the spark for this book. It was 2018, and we were heading up to Scotland for some time away, and I am completely in love with the Scottish Highlands. I think it's the most beautiful place on earth, and there was a terrible snowstorm and we really shouldn't have made the journey, but I really wanted to get away and I was desperate to go. So we drove up through the snow and nobody else was on the roads the further we got up into the Scottish Highlands, because it was just so dangerous. And then we arrived at this property. And this bit might sound familiar to you. It was in the middle of nowhere. It was next to a loch. It was in this vast valley with nothing but mountains and a few sheep. The property was in complete darkness. It was very cold. We finally got inside and there was no power. And the whole place felt a little bit creepy, but we were really tired. And when we looked outside, the car was already looking a little bit snowed in. And we thought, okay, well, we'll make the most of it tonight. We'll get some rest. We'll figure out what to do tomorrow. It's going to be fine. And then just as we were about to go to sleep that night, I heard a noise and I looked up and I saw a face in the window. And I was terrified. And this moment of absolute terror was the spark that which then became Rock, Paper, Scissors. And in real life, it turned out just to be a really very kind and friendly caretaker who was so worried about us making this crazy journey that he drove to the property to make sure we were okay. But the fear that he caused, mm-hmm. and the terror in that moment sparked the idea, which I then thought on for a really long time. It would have been at least a year and a half, 2 years before I started writing. But by then, the whole story was in my head. And as you know, my crazy shed with all the cards were all in place. And I was ready to begin. So yeah, I do tend to think for a long time, and often it'll be the characters that come first. And I sometimes fall in love with the twist quite early, and then I think on the twist for a really long time too.
Oh, see, that probably explains why your twists just seem so, like, because you've thought so much about them.
I've obsessed about
that. Makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's funny because I was going to ask if, you know, the place where they stay in this is based on a real place, and it sounds like a lot of that was.
Yeah, no, it totally is. I've sort of, there's a lot of fictional bits that have worked their way in. It definitely wasn't as creepy as the Blackwater Chapel in the book, because then I really wouldn't have got out of the car. I'd have walked away if I had to run even. But yeah, so it's funny because my mother-in-law, the book's just come out in the UK, My mother-in-law is reading the book and sending these text messages saying, so hang on, it's about a couple who go to Scotland, and me and my husband often go to Scotland. They have a black Labrador. We have a black Labrador. And she's reading this going, is everything okay with your marriage? Is my son okay? And I have to send these reassuring messages back going, it's just fiction, I promise, we're fine. That's the only problem with writing about slightly problematic marriages. Everybody starts to wonder, it, are you okay? That's what I keep getting at the moment.
That is true. That is sort of like a recurring theme through some of your books, is problematic marriages.
I know. What does it all mean? Or to sit down and talk about this with someone, they'd probably have a field day, but we're just going to stick with the line, it's fiction, we're fine.
It's all good. I mean, if maybe in some ways that actually speaks to the strength of your marriage. You're like, it's so good, I have to manufacture drama in my books, you know?
Thank goodness I do have a happy marriage, because my husband is always my first reader. So can you imagine what it's like for him reading these books? You know, what did I do? I remember when he read Sometimes I Lie. So this was the first time I'd written anything like this. And he just kept looking up from, he'd read a few pages and then look up at me and say, what is this? What have you written? And I remember that night he was sort of jokingly, I think, saying maybe he should sleep in the spare room. So yeah. it can definitely make life interesting.
I imagine. Yeah. And, you know, something I also like about your books is that they often sort of have like multiple, you know, like with this one, there's sort of like multiple timelines, but you have like the letter side of talking about what has happened in the past year. And then you have like go back and forth to where they are now when they're at the chapel staying there. And I imagine your big note keeping and plotting helps a lot with keeping those timelines straight, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I've always felt like this. I always think that people become the people they are for a reason. Whenever you meet a baddie, if you like, whether it's in a novel or watching a TV show or just on the train, I always sit there and think, why is this person like this? It didn't happen by accident. What happened in their past that made them become this way, behave this way, think this way, speak this way? So I think, I guess I always do tend to explore that in the books. I want to know, why is this character the person that they have become? And I want the reader to share that journey and to also understand and to sometimes question our own judgment of other people, because there is always a reason why people say and do the things that they do.
Yes. Yes. I think what I like about this conversation is just like learning about how much you think about these things. Not to say that other writers don't, of course, but just your whole like, I think about these things for like a year before I start writing. And I'm like, oh, you really understand these characters and like this book and like what is happening. And that's just fascinating to me as a reader.
I think when I write the first draft is when I'm at my worst, because I tend to just disappear inside the book. And I remember with this book, I was walking up the road with my dog and one of my friends drove past, and she said that she drove past one way and she yelled at me out of the window. And then she went around the little mini roundabout and she drove back the other way and she hooted her horn and she said, I didn't even blink. Mm. And it's because I was writing a first draft. I was so inside the book, just walking the dog, but in my own little world in my head, I didn't even notice that someone was yelling my name or hooting their horn. So no, I do tend to think about the books for a really long time, but also during that first draft, I do sometimes disappear a little bit inside them.
So what is your writing process like? Do you write every day? How does that all work?
First draft is normally the really intense bit for me. I just get so excited. I think because I've been plotting and thinking and doing my strange little colored cards in the shed for so long, it's so exciting to finally sit down and, you know, start typing away on the laptop and seeing the words appear on the screen. I still find that first bit crazy exciting. I tend to disappear for that bit, and that normally takes me about 3 months to have a first draft that I'm happy with. And sometimes at that stage I'll then share it with my agent. Sometimes I might do another draft. I find that books are a little bit like children in that way. They all sort of behave in different ways or misbehave in different ways. And so it takes a little while for me to feel things out and to be happy to share it. And I always want it to be the best it can possibly be before anyone else reads it, actually, because you only get that first reader reaction once. So yeah, they've all taken different length of time to write, and then I send it off and my agent will read it, and then he'll send it to my publishers and they'll read it. And then editing, I still tend to work most days when I'm editing and then going through that phase, but it's less intense. I mean, when it's the first draft, I've been known to get up at 3 a.m. before and just plow on through till I can't stay awake anymore. But so yeah, it all kind of varies, but I'm in my shed a lot, but then I'm happiest in my shed, so it's all good. It's all good.
I mean, so, you know, if you've been plotting and you've spent all this time thinking about, you know, this book and these the characters, like, how do you know when you're ready to start writing?
Oh, you just know. It's a really weird thing. It's really hard to explain. It's almost like they let you know. They decide, like, now we're ready to go. And it's almost like, yeah, I don't want to say that I hear voices in my head because that makes me sound completely crazy, but it's almost like you know when you're ready, and you know when you know them well enough, and they will let you know, now is the time to write my story. And then I just try and do it justice. And for those first few months, I do have a very close relationship with the characters, so they almost feel like family. And then it's a little bit sad when you hit send, because they're not yours anymore. That's the point where, you know, you're going to share them with other people and share them with readers, which is brilliant. And I love hearing from readers, and I love hearing and seeing what they think of the books. But that first bit, that's the intimate bit where it's just me and the characters on our own doing our thing.
I'm wondering if, you know, as you're writing, if you... Well, first, like, what kind of books do you like to read? But also, do you read this type of book while you're writing, or do you find that sort of maybe messes up your process a little bit?
Yeah, I read a lot, and I read all genres. And I know that some authors don't read while they're writing, or they don't read certain genres. But I don't really, I just read normally all the way through. Actually, I've always been a bit of a bookworm. I can't imagine not reading. It makes me really sad, just the thought of it. I tend to read whatever I fancy reading, so it's not just this genre. I do read probably more crime thriller books than any other genre, but I do tend to read a little bit of everything, whatever takes my fancy, really. I'm so glad that I can finally go to bookshops again and potter about, because for me, there's nothing quite like that. I love, obviously, getting book recommendations online or from friends or from other people in publishing or from other authors, but for me, there's nothing like just going to a bookstore and browsing yourself and picking up a book that you've never heard of, sniffing the pages, giving good sniff, and just choosing something because your heart wants to read that story. I'm so happy that I'm allowed to do that again, finally, a little bit. So no, I read all genres, and I'll dip in and out of current things, and I'll sometimes go back to a little bit of Agatha Christie, because that always makes me really happy, and she's just so clever. And so I'd read a lot. It's quite a variety of books on my bookshelf.
I'm glad you mentioned Christie, because this book in particular reminds me a lot of Agatha Christie books. It's that sort of like locked room mystery where you know, these two characters are at this, like, they're snowed in at this weekend place, and you know, I'm imagining that some of this was written and edited obviously during the pandemic, and when you are also probably not snowed in necessarily, but like locked in. And I'm wondering if that feeling of experiencing being that, like, those that close quarters where you can't go anywhere, if that translated onto the page and the experience that the couple was having.
Yeah, no, it totally did. It's I feel as though there's this permanent sense of fear and anxiety in this book. And when we recorded the audiobook quite recently, actually, I was genuinely scared because I, you know, as an author, you move on, you know, you're working on the next book. And it had been a few months where I've had nothing to do with Rock, Paper, Scissors. And then I was listening to the narrators reading it, and I was like, this is really terrifying. What was going on in my life when I was writing this? Oh, the pandemic. Oh, that explains everything. But, you know, of course they're trapped and they can't get away from each other and they're scared and there's all this stuff going on that no one quite understands, and it's a permanent sense of anxiety. So, you know, that all made sense. And I've been incredibly lucky with all of the books, but I'm also incredibly lucky with this one, that the Netflix are making an adaptation of the book, which is just, it's just so crazy exciting for me. And but that was something they picked up on. That was something they said they could tell, that the book had been written during the pandemic and it had this feeling to it and it had this vibe to it. So I think you can always, you know, authors, we don't want to put ourselves into books, and certainly the kind of books and the characters that I write, I don't want to recognize myself too often in there. But no, I can definitely see and hear and feel what was going on in my life while I was writing this book.
Yes, I'm very excited for the adaptation. I'm looking forward to it. So are you, it's like, involved at all in
a little bit. It was with all of the books, I've never really sat there writing them, imagining them as TV shows. I remember with Sometimes I Lie, I had a phone call with Sarah Michelle Gellar, and I remember my agent saying, Sarah Michelle Gellar wants to have a phone call. And I thought, isn't that Buffy? I was so kind of overwhelmed by this. This just seemed so kind of far-fetched and crazy to me. And she was just so lovely on the phone. And I almost felt like I was trying to talk her out of it, because I thought, how can you do the twist on screen? Mm-hmm. But this was the only book where I did, as I was writing, I thought, this could work on screen. And I guess maybe I was, because of the pandemic, I was watching a lot of Netflix, and I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if Netflix made this book into a TV show? So when I got the email from my agent, I was so tired. I was working on another deadline for another project, and I thought I was hallucinating. I just thought, this can't be real, can it? And so I closed my laptop and I took my dog for a walk, which is what I always do when I think I'm losing my marbles. And then my friends drive past and hoot their car horns and I don't hear them because I have lost my marbles. And then I got home and the email was still there. So, oh, I'm thrilled to bits. And I had a Zoom meeting with the producers, because this was quite a long time ago, the initial news that we were going to be lucky enough to have this one adapted for Netflix. And the Zoom call was fantastic. And I'm so excited because it's going to be set where it's set in my head. And I love all of the things they're going to do for it. And I love their casting ideas. And I love that I'll be able just to go along and see a little bit of filming. And it's very, very thrilling. And I've spoken to the screenwriter, who just understands what I was trying to do with this book and the story I wanted to tell. So I really can't wait to see them come to life on screen.
See, look at that. You like manifested Netflix adapting this book.
I know. Isn't that just crazy bonkers? Sometimes I Lie, I remember one of the first newspaper reviews, they got the name of the character and my name mixed up. So the main character in Sometimes I Lie was called Amber Reynolds, and she's in a coma. But the newspaper review said, Alice Feeney is in a coma. And for weeks, I thought, am I? Have I just invented this whole having an agent, being published thing? Because it took me a really long time to get published. So no, maybe none of this is real. I could still be in my coma and I'm having a lovely imaginary chat with you. No, I'm sure you're real. It's all good. It's all brilliant. I've just been very, very lucky.
Yes. Well, I have loved talking to you. I just have one question left, which is, okay, what do you hope readers take away from Rock, Paper, Scissors?
I really hope that if readers are kind enough to pick up a copy of Rock, Paper, Scissors, it's basically me inviting them to take a roller coaster ride with me. There are going to be some twists. There are going to be some turns. I'm probably going to turn the story upside down a few times and make you feel a little bit disorientated and perhaps a little bit scared. But by the time we get to the end of the journey together, I just hope we've all had a good time and that they've enjoyed the ride and enjoyed the read.
Perfect. Alice, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. It's been really lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hi there, I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor. So while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.